Hollywood Studios in Johnston proper. You are live from the bath.
I am working man, I get things done. Work for the Holy Ghost, work for the Son.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, going to be from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. I don't know. You know, I have to keep like a hard mute on you jokers. We're trying to start a quasi-legitimate program around here.
That explains why you didn't hear any of the things I said before you took me off mute.
I didn't take them in at all. All right, you're listening to Live from the Path.
Here's just to sum it up, I was asking to be taken off mute.
Well, but that's ironic and unfortunate for you. Yeah. Here's what we got going on the program this evening. First of all, a man I like to call Complaint Line McCormick is in the studio. Cody's back. You will recognize him. He was on a previous show, and we're glad to have him back in here. He also, it may or may not be him. It could be just a salacious rumor, but I did get something on a question on the Complaint Line last week.
Of which Ben Googled the phone number to figure out who it was.
I find the local numbers, I feel bad. Here's what I'm actually worried about, is I'm worried that I will respond and like someone expects that I know them, and I don't actually like mm-hmm. I like, oh well, they'll recognize my phone number because I just assume most people from a local number are people who I know who are listening to the program. And so
what an arrogant thought. Anyone within 15 counties believes that I should know them.
They shall know me. Anyway, so I was just checking, I'm like, does anybody know this person so I can make sure I respond appropriately?
I didn't even get a response though.
No, yeah. I was gonna wait. I was gonna answer it.
Do it live.
I was gonna answer it today. Okay. I'll answer it today.
Just so you know, if you write into the complaint line, Ben's going to PI and figure out who you are to know whether he's going to answer it or not.
No, I will definitely answer.
You didn't even answer Cody.
I was going to do it tonight. It's a teaser. I feel like we're on the fence where like Cody might stop listening to the show, and so I got to hold on to him. I'd say if you listen next week, I'll answer this question. Okay, so anyway, we're going to get to that. Cody, do you remember your question?
Yeah.
Okay, what was it? Give him a taste.
So it has to do with the why Easter follows the Gregorian calendar and not the lunar calendar like Passover.
Yeah, it should be right after Passover, like in Biblio times.
It's a tricky wick. Okay, so we'll get to that. Also,
it rips.
Have you ever felt spiritually meh?
Mm. Meh.
Yeah, kind of like that. Like, meh, I don't know.
No, that sounds more nefarious, like gargoyle. No,
like a Minecraft villager.
Who am I thinking of? Gargoyle. Yeah, like a Minecraft villager.
That's what I mean.
Not Gargamel from the Smurfs, like I was thinking.
Yeah, so like you are just, it's not like you're trying, like you have it in your mind, like I'm sick of Jesus or I want to rebel from God. But like living in a relationship with the God of the universe, you just don't. You don't want to do the things that you know are necessary or helpful or that otherwise keep you connected and following and doing the stuff that you're supposed to. And like you can think about prayer time and Bible reading, but like it could be just any number of things where you're like, I just don't. I know I should, but I'm not going to. And you're having trouble actually even getting yourself jazzed up to go do that kind of thing because like I think oftentimes, even if you do it, you're like, well, I didn't really feel anything related to that. And so like even as you do it, you're like, meh, okay, I took it in, or I spent that time, or I thought the words, or whatever it was. And so we want to talk a little bit about that. So experiences in feeling that way, what part of those things are kind of normal, and what are some things where you're like, you might be, that might be in some territories of which you, it's abnormal, and things you might be able to do or think about related to that to kind of change your disposition
mm-hmm.
towards being spiritually meh.
Meh.
So we're going to talk about that. Also, there was an article on coffeehousetheology.com, and it was basically 10 justifications that people give to not be a Christian. And so we were just going to, I thought maybe we just.
Is it to not believe in God or not be a Christian?
It says, to not be a Christian.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to hit those first. And we're going to say like, we can't land on any one of them for more than a few minutes. Otherwise, the show's going to be too long and Mike wants to sleep in his own bed.
Yeah, I do. Right?
And so we got to get him out of here at a decent moment. Luckily for me, I'm sleeping on the couch anyway because some recent renovations in my bedroom and the Quick Star's open 24 hours. I have no pressure to leave. I could be here as late as necessary.
All right, Ben is selling this as if he's on purpose renovating his room The ceiling legitimately just fell in on its own.
Yeah, yeah, like a flop house apartment ceiling. it collapsed. It was, yeah. Okay, here we go. Top 10 reasons to not be a Christian. Number one, there's no scientific evidence whatsoever of any miracles ever actually occurring.
I think that's not true, right?
Oh, I don't know. We're in a real pickle if it's not.
What's no scientific evidence?
Yeah. Whatsoever. That's pretty strong language.
Yeah, that's pretty bold.
That's like, I've researched everything.
Yeah, like I've checked all the things.
Nothing. Nothing anywhere in any time frame.
There is, I'm going to get, maybe I got the author wrong, but there's a book of miracles by, I think it's by R.T. France. And there's like an 800 page version, and then there's like a more populist 350 page or so version. And he's basically a dude who goes, I'll just go check him out. Now, here's the thing. I will tell you that we've read articles. Most of the investigators of miracles tend to feel like ghost hunters. They tend to come from the Pentecostal background, of which is largely like claiming the miracles. And then they sent out this team of what feel like ghost hunters to be like, hey, we're going to validate. You remember that article like 4 or 5 months ago where it was where the guy opened the website, like regrowthetoes.com? Do you guys remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
it was at James River Church, who this week, I think, like disassociated from the Assemblies of God denomination. But like... And it was like the guy was like, look, just send us pictures. Just send us pictures to this lady's toes that have regrown. And then, like, we'll know. And, like, no one would provide pictures and, like, no one would provide any justification. The guy got a hold of some pictures and they did not regrow. Like, they were kind of stubby and they're still kind of stubby. And so this big miracle they were claiming. And so I say that because, like, they've done documentary filmmakers and stuff going out to validate these miracles. And, like, I don't think much of it because it tends to come from the camps of people of which there is money or power involved with being miracle workers. This, however, that miracles book is basically like the guy just, he went through and he's just done tons of miracles in all different sorts and like went and saw the physical evidence, talked to doctors who were not believers, talked to like other people who were not believers who were like, we have no other explanation for this.
Yeah.
And not only that, but like, I think we do have like experience even in this room of either being part of or hearing about people like one step removed where these miracles have occurred.
Oh, yeah. I have a conversation with my doctor once that he basically said, there is no explanation for what happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
no medical explanation. All I can call is a miracle.
Yes.
I'm like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. There we go.
And like, you'd also have to discount almost everyone who came to know Jesus. Like they, of all the parts in The Chosen that where they nailed it, Mary says, I was one way, and now I'm completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And it was him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, like, there's countless stories of people that were that way. Right? Like, that had an encounter with God. And, like...
with multiple eyewitnesses.
Yes. Yeah. And, like, even people's lives have changed. Where they were on a trajectory that were completely a different way than God would have otherwise prescribed. Even, let's just say that God didn't exist. Right? And their life completely turned around because they had this experience. And, right? Like... there's people who have done drugs and that has not come true for them. There's people that have tried other religions and that is not a truth for them, right? Like they run into Jesus and then their life just changes. And like there is millions of witnesses to that.
Yeah.
And I would even ask if this is their reason to not become a Christian, I mean, it seems pretty weak. It's like, so what if they're, I mean... what's the flip of that? You know,
yeah, like it's the only facet to following God is the fact whether a miracle occurs or not.
No miracles, can't be a Christian. Well,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it does. I mean, what it does support is that, like, if you had a, and this will, I think will happen in one of the other options that they give down the list, which is like, hey, science and what I read in the scriptures are not compatible. So if miracle by definition is something that does not otherwise behave according to the rules of science or our perception of how the rules are, well, then that would eliminate God as not only the creator, but also any action he may take that otherwise is a deviation from those rules. And so it actually falls. I think it moves into that camp, really. It ends up just being here's how I believe that the world functions. No one can show me that anything's behaving outside of those laws. And so miracles are not a thing.
But they do that all the time, right? Like science has changed vastly in even the last 100 years.
Yeah.
Of how they believe that the world works or what it does. And so, like, where science gets the option to be able to disagree with itself and then change a new tact, God's truths have held forever. and he does not change.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Good science does modify. Like, we learn more, we see the world differently, we validate that, hey, things are not quite as we expected them to be. It's part of the, frankly, outside of the creation, like, it's why the Earth keeps getting older and older from a scientific perspective, because the more they learn, they're like, well, that couldn't possibly work out in such a small amount of time, and so... You know, it goes from, they keep adding a billion years here and there because how the world is presenting itself, their previous explanations don't fit. Now, like we would say, it's just a creator. Like you can't continue to exponentially make the world older. But that's actually good science. It's good science to interact with something, have it change what your boundaries were, and keep learning. I think actually one of the there's been a level of confidence, or what is most probably better targeted as arrogance, from a scientific perspective over the last 50 years on this belief that we finally got it all figured out and that like none of these
science
things
is settled.
That's silly. Even if you believe some of these things morally or whatever, or they seem right to you, I'm okay with all those things. It's just like the settling, like that's not science.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so I think it's not true that there's no scientific evidence whatsoever. And there are plenty of miraculous encounters that people can acknowledge they're miraculous and not acknowledge Jesus. But to act like there's no miraculous things is just foolish. Like, I think that's just silly. Number two, the Jesus story is just an accumulation of myths of legendary people all rolled into one uber nice guy. That's not even an accurate rendering of the scriptures. I don't know that you could look at Jesus' whole life and go, well, that's a nice cat.
Yeah.
He's a vandalizer.
Yeah. He calls people a brood of vipers.
Yeah, yeah. He insults people. He turns over the temple, like the tables.
So they've studied all of science and ignored all of history.
Yeah,
in the first two.
Yes.
I mean, there's all kinds of historians who are like, I didn't believe in the guy, but he was there.
Yes, totally right. They're right. That's right. It is bad history to not believe in the historical Jesus. Whether you believe that he's the Son of God is somewhat of a separate question. But like, it's firmly established that not only did he exist, that he was crucified, and largely for that claim. Mm-hmm. And so, whether it meant anything or had any deeper meaning to that is a fair question, and I think worth interrogation. But to otherwise act like he wasn't a historical person, like that's absent even decent history. Three, science and faith are incompatible ways of thinking, separate realms that should be kept separate.
Mm.
What do you guys think? Agreed.
I think this had to have been written by a third grader.
Yeah, actually, I would say, I don't think this is true. I do think that oftentimes we're looking for the scriptures to give us either a newspaper-like history of something or a scientific textbook rendering of an event, and I think it is not trying to do either of those things in the same way it's not proposing to be a law book for us. And so I think we do have to be cautious on overstating places where scripture is pointing to a truth, but it may not be, not that there are different versions of truth, but there are different aspects of it. And so it was kind of like I was reading it was either a psalm lately or maybe it's just something I want to get to later on, which is on David's claims in 2 Samuel 22, where he's like, I've been righteous all my days. And no, but he's like, God thundered from the sky and his shadow covered the trees and brought the lightning and all this business. And you're like, that didn't happen. Like, it was not a physical thing that occurred. This is in his life. There is no evidence or even other speculation anywhere else that some event occurred where God's shadowed foot came to the ground and things died or things like this. Like, he wasn't describing a physical event, but what he is doing is looking back at God's movement in his life and his the things that he's interacted with as a rescuer and as a redeemer and as a person that has empowered him to otherwise fight for Israel. And he's using very poetic language to do it, which is not a surprise from a psalmist, right? And so to look at it and go, like, is he communicating a truth about God? Well, certainly he is. Do I require from a biblical perspective that at some point God's like stanky leg made its way down to the down to the earth?
Send the stanky leg.
No, it's not required, and it's a misreading the scriptures to propose that it had to be an event that happened, which I get is difficult, because then you have to read the whole things and you're like, well, this maybe wasn't an event and this was an event, and like, it complicates how we read the scriptures. I get that, which means you got to be even more careful, but it does overprescribe sometimes the basis of which we're claiming a scientific reality from scripture. I just would be I double check that it's, we're not having a conversation that is communicating a truth, but it doesn't have to be a physical reality.
Yeah, I think we generally like to say that like science is the attempt to try to figure out how God did something, yeah, right? Or how God created a thing to work. And like, once again, like we get the freedom to go, oh, we misunderstood that a little bit. This is more likely the thing. Except for like when an arrogance creeps in there and goes, well, we're going to take out the fact that God was involved. And now you're trying to explain something and saying there's no chance God was involved in it. And yes, you're going to continually get that wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so like, yeah, I don't find like we don't. There's plenty of evidence that points that like science and even biblical accounts of things are definitely not incompatible. In fact, even almost every archaeological dig like deepens the fact that the Bible is correct and accurate.
Yeah. Or even some of the stuff that they're finding where they're like, they'll be like, hey, we're not sure where this town is. And we're like, haha, the Bible made it up. I mean, most of the Bible, like the commentators and even like the rabbis or priests, like depending how far away you got from an event, they'll be like, we're actually not sure where this is. Like, it's not uncommon just because someone made a map with right. a dot on it. That's like, we think.
Like, yeah, that's true. You don't think about that, but like, it's Fred's map or Balthazar's map. You know what I'm saying? You're like, if he says Gath is here, you're like, I mean,
probably.
Balthazar says it's around here, but it's not like he had like a ruler out yeah. or like a modern surveying equipment.
No GPS to
yeah,
yeah like right.
Sodom's here.
Yeah, he's like, well, it took a half a day ride by camel. I can usually move. Yeah, well, you know.
A little bit quick today. I had a yeah. little extra.
And it's problematic because like you've got to take around like Samuel's time, Saul's time. There's multiple Gibeahs. There's like Gibeah, Gibeon, and when he flees, when David flees, he goes to Nob. They think it's a mile north of Jerusalem. It could be as far as 10 miles east and 1 mile north, or it could be like all kinds of places. Like, they just don't.
This is how I give directions. It could possibly be north, or very likely to be east, maybe.
So I'm saying, like, just drive around.
They're trying, you know. Actually, the ESV is pretty good at this. If you look at maps in the ESV, they'll put like a town and then like a question mark. We're like, I don't know, maybe. we're not sure. Okay, they're on a one-track mind here. Number four, the history of science is the story of one religious superstition after another being eradicated by reason and logic.
Oh. And yeah, go ahead.
Just one more time. Reason and logic.
Reason, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Which yeah. like it sets the playing field of the chess game and says like there can be no miracle because right. there's a predictable way of something working. And so if you in the presumption that miracles cannot happen, then it becomes very, then you start dismissing things that otherwise fit that assertion. But if that's not a proper assertion, then the whole game opens back up again.
Yeah.
And yeah. so, yeah, go ahead.
As a former non-believer, right? If you're looking for reasons for it not to be true, right? For all of those things.
Yep.
As somebody that's not a Christian, you're going to find them all.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to pick it apart. You're going to find it. But I can tell you as a Christian, like they are true, right? Those things that I would tell people, yeah, that's not true. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. You're reading that wrong or you just you got the book that you're reading, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, for science to not even allow one of the variables,
right.
You know, it's not legitimate science. It's
absolutely.
Like, no, we just decided that's not true. It's like, well, that needs to be included in, you know, as you're studying things out, as you're figuring stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah, because like if you just pick anything, pick you know Jesus bringing his friend back from the dead. Like logically, that cannot happen. Mm-hmm. And so if you immediately say, "Look, everything but bows to this human understanding of philosophy of logic," then that story is tacitly untrue. But you're coming at it from the wrong angle. You have to come with the angle of is that story true? And then now how do I understand it? Either it becomes logically true that people just come back from the dead, or you have an interactor who is able to do things outside of the realms of which our human capacity has come to terms with, and then you have to reckon with how could that possibly be? And that's how you get to God, is that type of understanding. And so
eliminating other things. Like, maybe it was a cold cave and he was damp and he suddenly woke up and it's like, but he had all the wounds, you know? Yeah. It's like, I mean, you know, all the logic tends to prove the resurrection.
That's right. And like, it's perfectly fine. I don't, like, God's story can handle your interrogation.
Yeah.
Like, the people who are like, hey, did Jesus revive? Did he really die? Did he really come back from the dead? I think you should totally interrogate that because, frankly, if you're saying that you're going to give up whatever it is to, like, goodness of being a human perspective is, and you're going to say, I'm going to follow what this God says is good, even when it's counter to my culture, my urges, my whatever it is, then it better be true. Because, like, there's a significant consequence, not only that to you, but you're proselytizing. You're going to other people and saying, give up that. Don't marry this person. Stop acting this way. Don't enjoy that thing. Because this thing is true. And so I beat it up. Like, you should go to town and make sure you feel comfortable with it, and, like, make sure it's true. But again, millions of people over the centuries have beaten this thing up and said, yep, it pans. Not only does it pan out on the way that we interrogated it, but I see it in my neighbor's life. I see it in my life. I see it in the peace that I have when I go to sleep at night. And so if I take the macro and it's holding up and I see the micro, then what am I fighting about anymore?
Yeah.
So, here we go. The Bible, number five, the Bible is a translation of tales cobbled together by Constantine in 300 AD. Okay.
I don't know why this one's not true, but I also arrogantly laugh at the ridiculous claim.
Okay. So here's the thing. Is it a translation of a translation? Yeah. Your version, probably, unless you're reading either translation one, you got yourself the Vulgate, or you're reading in some sort of modern language, then yeah, it's a translation of a translation. If you read Aristotle, you're reading a translation. And so, like, what other historical documents are you like, no, this didn't happen at all because somebody had to take the words from one language and move it into another?
Right.
Like, if you want to be that, like, am I cautious about how things get translated? Like, couldn't humans take a concept and have a hard time translating that concept into another language? Yeah. 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 I actually will tell you that the more you dig into that, the more you recognize it's an art, not a science, but it's beautiful nonetheless. Like, humans trying to find the words. Like, how dare we even have words that try to communicate some of these things that are going on? This is why Paul is so dense. Paul is saying crap, and you're like, are these combination of words together? I don't know. I don't understand what you're trying to say in this type of thing. And so language itself is difficult. So, like, yes, it's a translation of a translation. It's just, you know, do we have any reason to believe our translations are untrustworthy? No. No. We don't. Just as opposed to thinking it could be, so I believe that it is, just, like, beat it up for a while. Go check and see. Like, when we look at the Masoretic text, which is most of your Hebrew Bible, the Old Testaments are predominantly based upon texts that the Masoretes had logged from Hebrew. When they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, there's about I think it's 1200 or 1300 year difference or something like that between those two. I can't remember, like, Isaiah's, like, dead on. It's like 12, you know, it's, you got a century that goes by and we're talking about the exact same text. No one's in there jacking with it or, like, screwing around or trying to raise themselves up by power. Like, you don't have to change the scriptures for people to misuse them. The United States used them in the 19th century, used scriptures to justify ridiculous things with the scriptures as they sat. And so, like, I get that you'd be concerned about it. It just isn't really the tale of the tape. And so I would, just because it's possible doesn't mean it's true. What we have is pretty good. But, like, I was doing, I'm teaching through 1 Samuel right at the moment. And there's a guy, like, one of the commentaries, this guy, like, I bet every other line, he's like, well, the pointing of this thing makes us, we're not sure. We're not sure about, like, either we've never seen, it's a hapax legomena. We're not sure where we've seen this word before. And the Bible only uses it one time. So, like, here's what we think. And, like the, if you think Christian scholars are taking, like, difficulties in scripture and, like, hiding it away so that no one finds us out, you're crazy. These guys are very transparent.
Yeah.
There's committees of dudes meeting all the time going, no, we don't know. Or we found some obscure document somewhere and, like, well, let's relook then. Let's see if we understand this. We've got the, most of the concepts are stock solid, but, like, every once in a while, they'll find something, they go, you know, we've seen someone use this word in such a way that it doesn't completely change it, but there's something about that that, like, we think maybe the translation could be crisper, and they go back and they revise it. And so this is why I thought it was, remember we talked about we thought it was arrogant that the ESV said, hey, look, we're done.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's crazy. How could you be done?
What about the Constantine thing?
So they're referring back to the Council of Nicaea, which, interestingly enough, is also where they validated the calendar. was it the place, did a bunch of, Rome dudes get all these books together and go, these are in, these are out, like that? No, that isn't really what happened. When Constantine also didn't choose them. It's not like he had the choice to say what to do and what not to do. Did you get a group of people who got together and said, look, over the last 200 to 300 years, here's the documentation that we know, like someone knows a guy who knows the guy who knows the guy who wrote it. Like we have a good chain of custody on the veracity of this. And then do we have other places where we see people quoting these things or that kind of stuff? And then they looked at what they were trying to do was that what you would do is if you were trying to say, here's the stuff that's true, here's the stuff that's not true. Think about people Googling crap on Revelation on the internet.
Yeah.
Okay. I would say, in fact, I taught a Revelation class and I said, look, first of all, stay off the internet. If you insist on going about there, here's three places that is good. These are solid references. These are thoughtful. They don't always agree with me what I'm going to tell you, but like they're thoughtful and people who love Jesus believe it. Okay. Here's 10 places. Do not go. This is not trustworthy. They're misrepresenting scripture. They don't even believe it, some of these guys. And no, stay out of here. Okay. Does something like that happen at the Council of Nicaea? Kind of. Although almost everybody comes in with this set of, like, they agree anyway. They're mostly going, yes, do we agree? They're like affirming with each other that everyone's been functioning for the last 250 years around this particular set of writings. Does everybody agree with that? We kind of want to draw a line in the sand so we're not chasing this thing so that new stuff doesn't pop up. Because you could get into the 5th century and then someone's like, well, it's the 4th epistle of James. And they're like, well, hot dang. Now we got to get everybody back together and reevaluate the thing. And so that's kind of what happened.
And James has been dead for 300 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Could you find something? Yes, you could, I guess. Like, is there a third volume to Luke Acts? I think there probably is. I actually think Luke probably wrote Luke Acts and something else because Acts stops in a spot where you're like, hey, it feels like there could be more, right? And so, like, he's setting up the trilogy. And so could we find that somewhere? I don't know. We might. But this is folks going, look, let's just make sure it's clear that at this moment, we said these are the things we trust. Anything outside of this, we can't vouch for. And that, so does that happen? Yeah, of course it does, because that's what I would do. I would, here's a good resources, here are not good resources. And so,
yeah, I think you have to do that because the farther you get away from that historical accurate, right? Yep. Representation of the people that were there, the farther you get away from it, the more the you get lost, right? In some of the stuff. So
yeah, that's right. And I don't begrudge, like, if we think about stuff that's in the Catholic Bible, you got First and Second Maccabees and Tobit and like some of that intertestamental literature, like I wouldn't tell you not to read it. Some of it's interesting history. Some of it will tell you true things about God, just like you could have a conversation with a dude on the street and he may tell you true things about God. Would I lean on it for driving my theology? I would not. I wouldn't do that because I just don't know where it came from. But it's the same reason I wouldn't lean on like Nathaniel's random thoughts on theology. He might be right. But if we're trying to get everybody in the world to like believe a thing, you gotta draw it somewhere. Yeah, so they came up with good boundaries and they said, here we go. Yeah, this is what we got. So I find it completely reasonable. This gets poked at a lot and I'm like, I don't understand it. Like, it's what you would do. all right, St. Paul, number 6. St. Paul invented Christianity by making a nice rabbi named Jesus into a god.
It's really awkward for the Christians who introduce him to Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, weird.
Yeah. That's wild. Yeah. Wait, I haven't invented it yet, guys.
Yeah. Hold on. I know you're calling him Larry, but we're going to reframe this thing.
The thing is, if you're going to be against something, you should probably understand it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, right. This one's baseless. This one doesn't even, like, no one even believes
it. Even the basic timeline. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't read well. Like, it implies that the Gospels have no impression that Jesus is who he says he is.
Yeah. And the thing is all of Christianity is functioning off these Gospels. Yeah. And so, like we believe the Gospels to be true. And so the fact that you're like, hey, this guy made this up, like the evidence you're pointing, you're getting is from the Bible, right? Because you don't know about Paul outside the Bible, nor do you can know about Jesus outside the Bible, except for historical accounts by like Josephus and some other stuff, right? But like those two appearing together, this is a biblical text, right? So you're merely like, just, you want this to be true. And so you say so.
I always find this super weird. There's a dude we had on the show. It'd been like the first year we were doing shows. And he became a pastor of a church. And I don't know, last couple of years, dude is just all about all we need is Jesus. And like, there are no constraints. Like all this theology that people have been put on you and all these laws and guidances and behavior, like Jesus just loves you. And I'm like, Where did you meet this Jesus from? Because for the same scripture of which you are pulling out, hey, this Jesus exists and he loves you, you're tossing all kinds of it out. So like, why, like, effectively you've created your own scripture, and you see this, like, both on the I don't want to believe in God and in the I want to manage or fashion my own God with my own hands crowd, which is like, well, I'll just take the parts that I believe and then use it against the thing that I'm pissed at,
yeah,
in some way or another. And so I don't understand it. Like, if I found that there were parts of it that I'm like, oh man, that doesn't hold up, I'd chuck the whole thing. Like, the whole thing is unstable.
Yeah.
If it's not all good.
Yeah.
All right. Number 7, evolution disproves God. Again, you've kind of mixed you've mixed things in here. I do think it's healthy. It is perfectly healthy to me. I'm not going to battle with someone who tries to discern the creation account of how much is trying to tell me a physical reality. At a very beginning of time versus a reality that is true, not just metaphorically. I do believe it's actually a real thing, but like, could you believe that it happened in after the world had already been established, and then God did a specific thing through a specific group of people that he created? Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of what he did with Abraham. And so I've heard that. I don't find that completely unreasonable. But none of those things would cause me to say if evolution as we believe it from a macro evolution perspective was true, I don't think one way or the other that tells me that God does or does not exist.
The evolution thing comes up quite a bit, and like, I've never seen anyone answer me to my satisfaction to where I even think about it more than 2 seconds, right? Because like, you're always missing the drive to be something else. Right. And so like even if it's the fish were first, and the fish is like, hey, we eventually want to grow legs, like, the fish isn't like, I would like to grow legs. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, the fish doesn't have the capacity to go, you know what, I bet if I threw an extra appendage in here and maybe a different way of breathing, I could become this. And then he goes back town and tells his fish buddies that this is what they want to do. And then they what, like, think real hard about it, or like, be like, yes, here's how we will accomplish this, right? Like, they have nothing, it's just like the dog has no ability to think past its next food time. Or like, it can't tell the difference between a door knock and someone knocking on a wall, you know, three yeah, rooms deep in the house. Because they just don't have it, right? They don't have the capacity to think, this could be improved about me. Or this system isn't working for what my 10th generation for me needs might be. And so we have to figure out a precipice of which to evolve. Right. And so that's because a fish could stay a fish all of its days and never have to come out of the water because of environmental reasons.
Yeah, we still have fish.
Right. And fish still exist. Right. And so like, it's not that I don't think that like, there is, I definitely believe in microevolution for sure. Mm-hmm. Or adaptation. I like the word better. Right. To say things that adapt to their environment.
Sure.
This makes sense to me. And but like, or if you saw fish that were like, where like the Amazon starting to slowly become like in a drought, and the whole river's about to go away, I don't know that it's outside God's purvey to make it on a cellular level. These things eventually figure out how to live in muddy water. You know what I'm saying? But yep. Like, overall, like, the drive that a non-created being like has a sentience to it that says, I just don't want to be an amoeba anymore. Maybe I will partner with other amoebas, and then we will become a mega amoeba, which will eventually show up to be a cell, and will eventually show up to be, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, there's an inherent drive within a non-intelligent being that I just don't know how, like, it wouldn't even know how to get itself there, you know?
Yeah, I do think that's where, like, that's one of the reasons that how old the Earth is keeps getting bigger, is because, like, you have a much stronger argument on random chance. You just, to make all the things happen randomly, you just need more and more time. Like, mathematically, a lot of these are math problems. They keep figuring out that, like, well, the odds of a thing happening are so astronomical that now the Earth itself has to be older to get this to be plausible. And so we keep making the world older. And so I like that, but that is a much firmer track than the sentience part.
Yeah.
Like, what I was watching some documentary one time, and they were like, whatever it was, like, giraffes adapted to be able to reach the leaves higher. I'm like, that requires not only like a sentience, but an inertia that lasts over X number of thousands, tens of thousands, hundred thousand years to go just a little bit more, and we'll get to those leaves up there. Like, that is unsustainable from a belief perspective, like randomness, you could go far enough out where you'll get some random thing to occur, but like that,
yeah,
I don't get that.
It's like a giraffe mom and dad going, hey, look, you need to only marry another long neck giraffe, and eventually your children will have mega long necks, and then we will have a race of super long neck giraffes. You know, like they just, it's just not the way the giraffe works.
Yeah. All right. Number eight, in their arrogant superiority, Christians think everybody else is going to burn in hell for all eternity. I mean, not everybody. Is that wrong?
I also don't believe it's an arrogant superiority.
I believe it says it.
And actually, most Christians I know, it's a deep sadness.
Yeah.
You know, that like they're begging you to listen. Not judging you from on high. I mean, we got our own group of folks that suck at this, but like overall, like they come on strong because they so badly want you to know what freedom and joy looks like.
Yeah.
And they reach into their bag of whatever, trying to figure out, is it just loving you? Is it being hard on you? Is it revealing truth so your life will shine in a way? Right? Like, granted, this is the roughest part of Christianity, is sometimes how humanity presents it. And the worst parts of it have been a superiority thing, but this is not most of the people I know, right? They are just trying to figure out how they can have their life reflected in a way that you will find it plausible and be open to a conversation about the good news. And so, like, I don't know which Christians this fella knows, but I don't think it's not very many that I've met, so.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think to Cody's point, like, it's true. That people, like, you could, this is your circumstance, this is your situation. And so, like, no one would go, if Dan was standing on a railroad track with the train coming and I said, Dan, you got to get out to weigh, that train's coming. And then Dan goes, you arrogant bastard.
You think you're better than me?
How dare you?
Like, it's just your truth.
It would be comical how dumb that would be. And so, like, if your representation of someone doing that and desperately trying to get you off the track, and maybe even jumping to try to shove you off the track, if you render that as arrogant superiority, then that is more of a personal problem than it is a reality.
Yeah.
So, all right, two more. Number nine, the Bible is riddled with contradictions and therefore cannot be the perfect word of God.
I'm going to answer this because otherwise Ben's going to go on for 30 minutes.
Okay, yeah, do it.
Most of these contradictions that you're referring to are you asking more out of the Bible than it's actually talking about. You're trying to pull things from it or read it like a newspaper, and it's not representing itself as a newspaper, and you're asking it to be something that it's not. And so, like, there are parts of the Bible that are to be taken literally. There are also way more parts of the Bible that are to be taken poetically or prophetically, or maybe putting in metaphors in a way that allows a very spiritual and hard to understand thing in a more of a, you know, a thing that a humanity can pick up on and maybe use as some kind of foundation. So overall, there are a couple contradictions here and there that I think, as we would probably agree, are worth knowing and worth sussing out. There could be just two different perspectives from two different writers. One guy was behind a tree, one guy was not behind a tree and missed that third guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Crap like that, that's completely reasonable. But overall, most of the contradictions that you're going to point to tend to be not literal representations of what's going on, but more metaphorical or, you know, broader understanding things of what's going on. And they're not purporting to be a crime reporter or a lawyer of any kind. And so you're asking it to defend a case that it had no intention of building.
Yeah.
Question number 10.
Okay. More people have been killed in the name of religion than any other cause in the history of the world. Sir, you spelled communism wrong. You did not use the correct letters to spell the word communism when you said religion. have plenty of that is the reality. More people have died under communist authoritarian regimes, far more than religious wars. However, is it true that religious wars have caused a significant, like a major amounts of death into the world? Yes. Is that wrong? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And so, but just because people are willing, it's also very second grader way of thinking about the world. Like, just because some people have fought over it doesn't mean the idea itself is wrong. Like, that's silly. And as a matter of fact, it's a blindness that I think very much risks allowing the pervasiveness of evil to have its way into the world. It's been one of the strong moral questions around certain political movements, if you do not believe that people and their motives can be evil and that you're dealing with reasonable parties who are always after the general human good, like, you're walking around blind. And so some things need to be fought for. The extent of which I think you should wrestle with that, the level of Christians and pacifism and how we change the world. I think you should wrestle with that. But like, I think it is very elementary to act like the presence of fighting or war is implicitly mean that the thing is a wrong idea or evil.
Yeah, and generally, like, to be honest, the ones I'm sure are your major examples were also tied up politically with some other things, right? I don't know that they were directly like, you know, I can't believe that you would do this, I will kill you because of that, right? Like, a lot of those things were tied up in land ownership and group domination, right? Not like overall, when Jesus wanted to change the world, he sacrificed. That's the way he did it. He surrendered, right? Yeah. And so like Ben is saying, like, that doesn't mean no wars ever get to be fought ever. But overall, like, some of the examples you're going to pick out, I would probably say this is not folks that their only aspect was to spread the good news throughout the world.
Yeah. I would also say this actually isn't a compelling reason to not believe in God. You may not like him. Like it could be, like, let's say you don't like some of the violence in the Old Testament, or you think the Crusades are a reflection of people who were accurately...
That's a great point. Like, I don't like Chairman Mao, but I'm not like, he never existed. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't like him.
The point is that, like, you could say, like, I don't, this is not true, but, like, if it were true that Yahweh directed wars and violence, that doesn't mean Yahweh doesn't exist. Like, so even if there, even if this was consistent with God's character, this is not a good reason to say that God does not exist, or even that you shouldn't follow him. You just have a disagreement with his moral character. And so I think you have to wrestle with God's moral character, and I don't think this is a good reflection of that. But I'm just saying that, like, on the basis that, like, well, God does, like, God has purported and his people have purported to do something that I disagree with, thus I should not be a Christian, or I don't believe God exists. Well, I mean, that's the justification a lot of people are having. Yeah. God does not support my relationship or my interaction with people in this way, or the implications of, or I don't want to give this thing or that thing up. And so they're like, well, then I don't believe in him. I don't want to follow him because I don't agree with him, or he doesn't exist. Well, like, it may not be wars, but it's the same justification. And so none of those tell you actually whether God is real. They just tell me that whether he's real or not, you disagree with him, which is not a very good standing. Like, I'd probably figure out whether he's real or not before I just decided I disagree with him, and that's a reason I'm not going to follow.
Yeah.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. I don't know. Maybe we got if we got some of those right or wrong, let me know. Hit us up on the Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. That's the Bob Eisenlauer Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. And we would love to hear your, I don't know, commentary.
Yeah.
Did we get that right? All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to do the question from the complaint line, from complaint line McCormick. He says... Well, it could be a lady. Based upon how it's worded, it's kind of feminine. Anyway.
It may have had something to do with my wife asking.
Okay.
Listen to Cody defend this thing.
I could see what he's saying. Dear Life from the Path, I don't have a ton to complain about, but my wonder is why Easter doesn't follow the same calendar as Passover, lunar versus Gregorian, wandering in Iowa.
Yeah. This is a great question.
Yeah.
I actually don't know why this never occurred to me until he brought this up, and I thought, why don't I ever think about this? You're right. This doesn't make any sense.
This is wild time. I don't know. Anybody have any? I have a thought, but does anybody have any thoughts?
Do you have an answer? Because I don't want a thought.
Oh, it's one of those things I've studied 100 times, and I think, oh, yeah, then I go away and I forget. And it's about the equinox and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So I think the basic answer is it was done by two different people with two different aims, right? Like, the Jews established the Passover calendar, and it's based upon their it's based upon their calendar and seasons and stuff like that. That they were not concerned at all when Easter was dated.
Right.
They kind of bowed out of that conversation. And so it's the early church who's like, oh, related to the equinox, we're going to do it here and there. And so the problem then becomes is that from the biblical narrative, and as we think about things like Pentecost and like Jesus and him going to Passover festivals, we're like, these things got to like line on up.
It should be end of Passover, Black Friday, Easter Sunday, done.
Yes. Yeah, but it does not work that way. You can have Easter happen before Passover, depending on how the calendars work out, based upon the seasons. And so, effectively, mommy and daddy got divorced, and they keep different calendars, and they set their own holidays. And so, I mean, that's the short of it. But it is super interesting, and it's awkward to try to explain ourselves when, especially when Easter happens before Hebrew Passover. It's weird at best. But that's what happens when mommy and daddy don't communicate.
Especially if it happened like in the biblical account. They're like, yeah, Jesus died on the cross. They're like, what? Why? What happened now? We're in the middle of Passover. We can't even go see it. Like, we got stuff to do.
He was the Passover lamb. The what now?
He showed up way early on a donkey. No one was even here.
Okay. Anyway, if you got questions, hit us up on the Bob Eisenlauer Live from the Path Complaint line. I actually had never thought that question. That had never occurred to me until Cody brought it up.
Just, you know, as a... you know, as I was getting into the actual resurrection story over the last couple of years, right, as I became a believer and I'm going through it, it's like talking about Passover, it's talking about all these things and I'm diving in, right, and I'm soaking it all up.
Yep.
And then Easter happens, I'm like, wait.
Wait a minute.
Wait, this ain't lining up. But, you know, I'm like backtracking, I'm like, absolutely. I'm like, you know, said he's gonna rise on the third day, but Friday, Saturday, like I'm trying to make all math work, right? Like all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where it came from. It's like, in my Neanderthal brain, it doesn't work. So
on the same lines, why do some people like? Why does my calendar show Easter Monday?
We talked about that last week,
didn't we? What was the answer?
We don't know.
It's a Catholic thing.
Greek. I thought it was Catholic.
Yeah.
Probably a Greek Catholic. That guy hard to get along with.
They were pretty much used to have a day off, so they had to call a holiday.
Hmm.
I thought it was the Orthodox.
The Greek Orthodox?
Yeah, I thought that's what was a day late.
Yeah, but okay. So, but why?
What does the word Orthodox mean?
It's just because they think that it happened like...
Hey. Don't ignore me.
Like a day, like a day after. A day after.
Ben, what's the word Orthodox mean? Does it just mean organized? Because that's what I think in my head. Greek organized.
Traditional.
Yeah, but what does it mean?
Put a Goog on it.
What are they saying?
What's the ChatGPT say?
Don't ask the ChatGPT.
Mike made me take it off my phone.
Yeah, I did.
He said I can't use it or the Facebook.
Well, some people argue, did he die on Thursday or did he die on Friday?
Oh, yeah, or, you know, there was somebody
did, I
don't know.
Passover because you got, or a double Sabbath because you have the Passover. And
correct. It was like the yearly Passover plus the, there was a whole bunch, like I said, as I was diving into it, that.
Cody, I will send you something. I did a spreadsheet on the, like, nerd style, like 2 years ago for the same problem, like trying to reconcile, like, how do I get 3 days out of the things that are happening?
Yeah.
And John's description is not the same as everyone else's descriptions, and it kind of throws the days off, but it works out. I'll send it to you because it's kind of a helpful.
Yeah. Well, you just know their culture. Any part of the day is a day.
Yeah.
Right.
So Friday at 3 p.m., well, that's Friday, and Saturday is all day, then. Sunrise came up on Sunday. That's the third day.
So that's the tricky spot. It's like technically Friday, like Friday evening is Saturday. Like their day starts in the evening.
Yeah.
And so,
was it Thursday? Because it was the, you know.
So that's where they debate a little bit.
Yeah. Because it's when sundown or sunset.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Okay, listen to me.
That's right.
Which is why we can get to the third day, because I believe it says at dawn, they went to the tomb and it was already open. So that means that.
Yeah, I always thought we were 2 days in.
Yeah.
Maybe even a day and a half, the way that I was doing my Bible math.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
okay. Hold on. I want you to keep this in mind next time you run into somebody who claims to be Orthodox of any way. This is the Greek word, comes from two Greek words, orthos meaning straight or right, and doxa meaning opinion. So the word Orthodox pretty much means I'm of the right opinion.
It's an established, long term, traditional.
Well, that's your rendering, Dan, but I'm very Orthodox in my beliefs.
Yes. Orthodox means I'm right.
Boy, I like that.
Who are you? I am not Orthodox. Well, I can be listening to you then. I mean, you have to at least believe your opinion's right. This is a bold stance.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm an Orthodox Christian. That means of my opinions are correct.
Yeah, I'm a Christian of the right opinion.
Well, all the offshoot little branches, they're not real. We're the legit church.
Yeah.
Is where it kind of comes.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? This is not an olive branch kind of thing.
Yeah, no.
This is a... No wonder we're getting nailed on superiority problems, right? The Orthodox church basically says, I'm right, well, everybody else is wrong.
These churches have named... Like, they went down the wrong path trying to name themselves. You're getting like the first, second, third Park Avenue Baptist Church or whatever. By now, I should have seen we are the super genuine Orthodox Christian church. Like, they built off the wrong superlative.
Are there any Reformed Orthodox churches? Because that would be hilarious.
We are the genuine but changed,
yeah,
but genuine.
Right. We were of the wrong opinion before, and now we are of the right opinion.
Repentant Orthodox.
All right, you're listening live from the path. Mike, what do you want to do here? We're 50 minutes in.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, you want to go, you want to save meh, or do you want to do it?
No, let's hit meh right quick.
Okay. So the question is, like, have you felt spiritually meh, and what does it feel like? Well, how does it show itself? And then why do you think you got there, and what did you do, or what have you been doing to try to get out of it?
So part of me likes to give a little bit of a pass here and say that I think it's just part of a broken humanity's walk, right? Compare this to like any exercise regimen that you've started. Right? Like, almost all the same things are true. You know you should be doing it. You know you feel good when you do it. It does create long-term healthy things in your life. And then, depending your level of capacity for doing this, you'll get to be 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks in maybe, and then you're like, or 2 weeks in, and then go, meh. I don't want to get up anymore. I don't want to make space for this. I can see that it's good, but like, you know what's also good? Not doing this.
Right.
What's also good is just being and sitting and resting and not like having this constant thought that you're behind on something, or, you know, like having this weight of repeatable responsibility, right?
Yep.
And some of that I think comes a little bit with modernity, right? With modern daily life, because like, your job's not flexible in this way. There are a ton of things that you already have to do and you can't get out of. Right. For most people, it's their job. Like, you have to be there. And so, like, you have to do X. It doesn't matter what your opinion on it is. You're going to have to do the thing. So they give you money and your life will continue on. Same thing with like putting gas in the car or whatever, all the things that you can't get out of. And so it seems like it's on top of extra for betterment. And you think, I'll get back to it. Maybe. Maybe this is just not the right season for me to be in this exercise program, but I will be ripped one of these days.
Yeah.
Maybe when the kids are older. Maybe when my job's not so busy. Maybe when I don't stay up so late. All the things, right? And so part of me thinks that our following of Yahweh sometimes falls into this category. You know it's good. You know you should be doing it. You know it's true. You're not saying that you shouldn't. But you're just like, meh. I just don't. It feels like a lot of extra work. Sometimes it is very soul-stirring. Right? To spend time in worship and prayer and Bible reading. And sometimes it's just like, okay, you know, that happened, I guess, you know, like I can think of 10 times when I've just gone to a church and worshiped and like I bawled like a baby, you know, and then I can think of 10 other times where I went and I'm like, man, you know, yeah, he's a good father. I hear you. I agree. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody's getting, these other people are wound up about it. And I'm like, I'm not wound up at all. You know, or like I've read Psalm 119 and had it knock me on my face and been like, yes, Lord, please like imprint this on my soul so I can come back to this. And then not a month later, I read it again looking for a little bit of a uptick. And I'm like, I don't know what this meant to me at the time. Right. It's not doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And so like it. I don't know. Like, I know how we get there. Because I think the same thing's true with our exercise stuff, you know, or like any other habit or thing that we're trying to do, except for this one. This one I actually think comes to with a more, I don't want to say this is like a specific theology, because I don't think I can actually point to a scripture that gives you this, right? But you're more attuned to the Holy Spirit's work when you're immersed in God's things. I don't think that God is moving less. I think that you are that, like, I am not seeing it as much, right? I am not looking for God to be moving. I'm not seeing the things that he's doing his word is not being revealed in my steps, you know, and like it feels more that way when you get separated from being in his presence. And so that seems a much higher consequence than obviously just skipping leg day. You know what I'm saying?
It's yeah,
like,
right.
Mostly because, like, I think as you follow Jesus, you're like, not only do I want to accept this grace and forgiveness of which I've been given, but hot dang, I want to tell some other people about it. But, like, if you're not, if God doesn't go with you or before you, if he's not going before you to these things and you're not able to see the things that he's doing, I don't know that you're being as effective. Like, I can tell the difference even when I'm praying. When I'm close to God, I pray like it like a water coming out of a hose. It just comes out. Like, I don't even know what I'm saying. When I'm not very close to God, I'm almost orchestrating what I believe to be a cool-sounding prayer or something that I think I would have said when I was more paying in his scriptures or more spending time with him.
Yeah.
And I think that there's just a very distinct, noticeable difference to me, you know? And so, overall, like, once again, I think I give a little bit of a pass as just being a broken human, like this happens sometimes, but like, I definitely want it to happen less. And I don't, like, there just becomes time that, like, you know you should do it, and you're just like, meh. Maybe even you'd get up early and be like, all right, today's the day, and then you're like, or I could make some coffee. Maybe the dog needs let out. Ah, then the garbage is here. Ah. And then, you know, it's time to go to work. I missed the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? And you're just like, well, you know, here I am. I don't know. Is that a common occurrence, fellas?
I think it's common. Would you say so, Dan?
I'd say so. Like, part of it's personality, too. Like, my personality, I'm like 95% of the time just steady with a slight incline, you know, growth, you know, I mean, but not like crazy. And then every once in a while I hit those peaks where I'm like, woohoo, you know, and then you hit the valley. You're like, man, everybody hates me and I hate me too. And but generally, if you just keep going back to steady, that keeps you going, you know, whether you feel it or not, whether you think it or not, you know, you just keep going and then it kind of comes back, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, like, what Dan is saying is 100% true. Like, your feelings get a seat at the table, but they don't get to run the meeting.
Yeah.
And so, like, when you start feeling that, like, once again, like, I think the draw sometimes is, like, I feel so disconnected from God. And, like, I think that that's actually probably a healthy feeling, right? Like, you know what it feels like to walk next to the Father and what it doesn't. And so this is where feelings get to be, they're not always untrustworthy, right? They could be very good indications that, like, I only feel this way if I've not been spending time with God. And I'm not saying that it's got to be three chapters a day plus reading Every Moment Holy and then 45 minutes in prayer, and otherwise you're out. God's mad. Yeah. You know, like that. I don't think he's walking away, but like,
right.
I think it's way more a intentional, like, God, I want to spend time with you. I want to know, I want to be a part of the things that you're doing and help me to see that. And like, I think I just flat out see less when I'm not part of it. Like, I still believe everything I've ever believed. I don't think God be mad at me, but I know that it just feels like I have a harder time, like, seeing opportunities that I would normally have seen if I was listening to him.
Because like same thing with your spouse, you know, you have a relationship and then all of a sudden, you know, you go through a busy season at work you got some stuff, you're trying to, I got to pay this bill and the car is broken down and your mind starts focusing on other things. You still love your wife, you're still connected to your wife, but you're just kind of distant, and she'll say, hey, dude, I'm over here. Then you have to kind of recalibrate, you know, yeah. Go, oh yeah, you're right, you know, and get back in. And I think it's the same thing in any relationship we have, but that goes back to the steady though. You go back. It's you haven't lost anything. You haven't, you know, suddenly decided you don't want to hang out with your wife anymore. You reboot and say, man, you're right. I'm the one who's changed. I'm the one who has to engage here.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I don't know. Cody, have you had this happen? You run into kind of seasons of meh?
Oh yeah, absolutely, through everything, right? I think intentionality is what brings it back, right? Mm-hmm. Just being that intentional, that desire for it. I think myself, I get lost in words, mm-hmm. right? As I'm reading the Bible and I'm doing all these things, I've said it a couple times, like, I just don't understand some of it, and I get lost, and I'm like, nah, I'm gonna just put it away because I don't.
Yeah,
I don't.
I didn't come here to feel dumb.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't understand it. So, you know, I have to go back, and then I feel like I'm not I'm not progressing, right? Because I'm reading the same thing three or four times because I'm like, oh, what? And maybe in my mind, I'm thinking like, I have to get something out of everything I read, right? And maybe in today's season, that's not the desire, that's not the plan for me in that season of what I'm doing right there. So part of that is me getting past my own, you know, thing of having to understand and having to know it all.
Yeah.
Before I can move on to the next thing, right?
Yeah.
So I can get very quickly like, I don't want to...
Yeah,
I went for a walk the other night with my wife, right? And I'm getting back working out and doing things like that. And she's like, "Well, what's your goal?" And I said, "Well, right now my goal is 6 days a week."
Yeah.
Well, but what is like? Do you have an intention of strength or losing weight or whatever? And I said, 6 days a week.
Yeah, just yeah.
Like that intentional doing it every day, and I did that last week, and now this morning, and so all these so. I said, everything else will come, it'll fall in, right? And I'll develop my plan, I'll develop all those things, but I got to get intentional with it.
Yeah.
And if I don't, then it falls away really quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I do, actually, and there is a little bit of a risk of self-fulfilling separation in there. Because I think, like, you could go, you know, maybe you're praying and reading your Bible, and you're like, you're just at the things, like, the right shape of things is happening. But then... you kind of get an expectation in your mind that, well, with those things, something else should be happening.
Yeah.
I should be, hey, I'm listening for God to speak. I don't hear anything. I want to go tell the world about you, Lord Jesus. I've not met anybody that I did not know anytime within the last 10 days.
Sure.
You know, so like you're looking out on those things and then it kind of gets the sense for, well, like, did this stuff, am I not doing it right? And no one likes to spend a bunch of time. Like if you were exercising and were having no impact or whatever, you lose a lot of your motivation to keep exercising. You're like, why am I even doing this? Or do I look silly doing it? Like I must be doing it wrong. And then like, what am I, now I am feeling like I'm just going through the motions and like that feels wrong. And then you just kind of fade away from the thing. Cause you're like, who wants to be involved in any of this? You don't want to be a fraud. You don't want to be fake about it. And so, like, I could definitely see that having happened in my life where, like, I'm feeling that it feels good to start. It feels good to hit, do the things that you're supposed to do. It feels good to 6 days a week. You're like, this feels great. And then you 6 days a week, like, there's a high that's with that. And then, you know, you get, like, 3 months in, and you're like, I've been cooking at this 6 days a week, and I'm not seeing the things that maybe I expected.
Sure. But I think part of that's driven by you don't do everything else that's expected you to do to see the changes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you brought up working out and you got to change your diet. You got to change things. So if you're going to be in the Word and you want a relationship with God, you got to change to make sure you have that relationship with God, right? Your mindset has to change, your interactions with people, all those things, being in the Word, being in prayer. If you're only reading the Bible and you're not in prayer and you're not sharing and you're not doing that, you're just reading it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're doing part of it. So you're not going to see those changes.
Yeah, right.
Right? So,
right.
I mean, you have to do a lot of things to see those changes, see that shaking and moving, right?
Yeah.
So if you're going to be intentional about it, you'll be intentional about the whole thing.
Yeah.
So.
And then about the time you're doing that and you're seeing some good results, you start feeling overconfident. You think, well, now I don't have to.
Right?
I'm actually pretty good at this.
Really close to God right now, right? Like, so.
And then you're like, crap.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody told me one time, you know, not too long in the past that, you know, God's always right there and you get to be as close to him as you want to be. So if you want to be in the Word and you want to be close with him, you want to have that close relationship, you just have to do it because he's right there waiting for you.
Yeah. And like, I think it's a good reminder too, to think about, you know, we're talking about reading your Bible. We're talking about praying and stuff. Again, these aren't just like tickets to entry.
Nope.
If you were trying to otherwise keep a good relationship with your wife, I mean, yeah, you could learn about her by reading her diary, but it's not really a healthy relationship if you never talk to her.
Right.
And these things aren't arbitrary measures of which God goes, if they do that, then I will do this. You're not trading him for that. Like, it's the natural way of which you otherwise start to understand God and the way that he interacts with the world. It's how you get open to things happening around you where if you're not looking for it, you won't see it. There's people who are just so good at this. Like they're open to God working that they'll see all kinds of things that it would have just gone over my head. Because they believe, well, God can, God does, and it may. And I just like, well, I don't know. I'm not sure about that. And so, you know, like I there's just an openness to that that you get from practicing listening, mm-hmm. reminding yourself like, oh, God does interact in those types of situations. He has done these types of things. And then you recognize him the next time they show up. And so you're not trading Bible reading and prayer as an entry ticket to like maybe God will interact with you. These are the natural ways of which you interact and yeah. become perceptive. And then the things that are going on will become more obvious.
Yeah. And to be open to feedback from other people, right? I mean, get that feedback from God, get that feedback from other people that are like, when I'm saying, look, man, he's just not moving for me. He's not doing these things, not fulfilling. And they're like, man, what about that the other day? That was a God thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Just open your eyes a little bit. And so sometimes it takes that calling you out and pointing it out to you and saying, hey, no, he is shaking.
Yeah, it's
going
true.
On right over here.
You're in meh and you're looking for meh.
Yeah.
And you're ignoring everything else. Yeah. Nathaniel, why are you always in the meh?
I don't know. Sometimes I even go past meh. I start thinking, man, maybe John Calvin was right.
Some of us are in, some of us are out.
Maybe I'm not in.
I'm like just going to sit and drink creatine all day.
Actually, that's a really good point. I do wonder how many people have embraced being on the wrong side of a Reformed theology because they felt meh. Because they're like, I'm not feeling this thing. Maybe I'm just not chosen.
Mm. Huh.
And so, and that's how you that's what's explainable. Because they're like, if I tried to do these things, I didn't see it. Some people are doing the exact same things I'm doing, or even less than that, and they're having these experiences that I'm not having. My only explanation is I simply have not been allowed to experience these situations. I'm not chosen. Mm. I actually do think that's quite a possibility.
Wow, that's bad.
Maybe you should come to the First Church of Reformed Orthodoxy, my friend.
Nathaniel, what have you, like, have you in a season or a, I don't know, a longer of meh, what have steps have you taken? What have you found effective and what have you not found effective?
On getting out of the meh?
Yeah.
Well, shoot, that'd be a good question. usually, I come out of the mat when someone, you know, gives me a kick in the behind and says, what are you doing, bro? You ain't doing this right.
Yeah.
Usually, it's one of you fellas or my wife who says, what are you doing?
Yeah. Are you even leading this family?
Are you even a man? You got it. Never mind. I take it back.
I'm not going to submit to this buffoonery.
You know, it's interesting to me. I remember one time we were teaching on where the fellas unroofed the roof. They tore the roof apart to lower the dude down. And I remember like what part of the discussion was like, boy, I mean, what is it as a have you thought about what it would mean in your life to just be someone who like tears off the roof as friends? And I'm like, I would love to be part of kind of what an unroof the roof moment. And then after I was done teaching that day, somebody came up to me and like, do you not realize that you've done that? I'm like, what? Unroof the roof?
Right.
No way.
Tell me more.
And they told a story. It was just about showing up. It was about being at a place when they needed people to be there. And I didn't think anything of it. It just felt like the thing we do. Like someone needed someone to be there and we were there providing support and encouragement and soda probably. And the way this person looked at it, we're like, you people unroofed the roof. You tore the place up to make sure that we got to see Jesus in that moment. I'm like, well, hot diggity dang. Mm. It felt so banal, that situation, to me. And in their mind, they looked at it and said, these people love me and they love Jesus, and they unroofed the roof to make sure that connection was in there in that moment. And so it's kind of like that. Like it gets to Cody's point, and I think a little bit to what Nathaniel benefits from, which is like, you just sometimes need people to reorient. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, and are we, it's even weird that the same earthly expectations that we know better than to chase from a Christian perspective, we'll give up and then start chasing other Christians around, like with that kind of stuff. And like, I get it all comes from the right heart because it goes, again, I don't want to be a fraud. I want to be doing the things that I'm supposed to. I've been doing sheep in and sheep out and other people aren't doing that. Am I sure that I'm not being lazy and that I'm not listening to God? Like, they're the right types of things to posture to Jesus for sure. But sometimes we just end up chasing other people's experiences and we miss out on the stuff that God is actively doing or has been doing in our lives because we were looking for something else. And even if it was intended for good, it becomes a mistake and it becomes a distraction. And then you miss the thing that God is able to do around you. And so I think it's just we got to be careful that our the first question on, hey, I'm feeling meh. I'm like, well, I don't know. Do you have anybody that can help you do a gut check as to whether you're even rendering your life correctly? Because yeah. Maybe you are. And it's a meh because you're not doing the things that otherwise would help you. It's a meh because you've like you're what you're chasing isn't something that God has for you to chase. You just saw someone else's experience. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you're just feel like, I don't know, you're not eating well. And so you feel crappy and the meh is on three different places and includes your spouse relationship and Jesus. Okay, well then, you know, get some more protein, Holmes. Like you gotta, we help someone, like maybe that's the right step. It's like when you're feeling meh, don't feel meh on your own. Find someone you trust, help them evaluate and talk with you, pray with you, and let's figure out where that meh is coming from. And maybe you just need some encouragement or maybe you need a Klondike bar. All right, David is confusing to me in 2 Sammy 22. I'll give you a week to check that out. We'll talk about that next week. Also, a reminder, next week, we've got a trio of musical guests.
Oh, boy.
Coming in. And so I'm excited. It's been a while since we had some musicians in the studio. And so we'll have some performances from Jeff Arundale and Dirk von Stein, who we had in earlier in the year. And then another Ms. Triplett. I've forgotten her first name.
Yeah.
I've not met her.
Right.
And so anyway, they're all going to be on the show next week. They got a show coming up, and we're going to get them in studio before they do that show together. So I'm excited to have them in. All right, Mike, let's give some advice.
Dear Life from the Path, my boyfriend and I have had a tumultuous relationship. Right now, it's good, but the issue I'm having is that his bed is super uncomfortable, and so is his couch.
What?
He spent a lot of money for both of them, but I am unable to sleep or get comfortable on his couch. How do I tell him he needs to replace them, or else I don't want to spend the night with him or watch movies on the couch at his house?
How uncomfortable is his couch?
Sounds really uncomfortable. Expensively uncomfortable.
This whole conversation is uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean...
Wait, was that it?
That's it. Okay. Whole question.
Okay.
He bought a couch made of marble. He said this will be expensive.
Well, fortunately, it's your boyfriend, so you shouldn't spend the night anyway. So
there we go. That's where I was going to go. It doesn't matter if it's bed uncomfortable if you're not staying the night there.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Sin is an uncomfortable cushion, my man.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is it. Our entire advice is, look, man, you don't need to be dating this fool anyway. Doesn't matter what his couch be feeling like. Okay.
I'm not saying don't date him.
Okay, let's caveat. First, I'm going to set the scene. I'm going to add a couple extra details.
Okay.
They're both 25 years old.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They both love Jesus.
Okay.
Yep. He invited her over to watch movies at his house.
Okay.
The bed is not an option, and they just want to comfortably watch The Chosen on the couch.
Holding hands?
And there's occasional hand-holding only when the Holy Spirit has done something great in the episode.
And they celebrate it together.
Popcorn. Yeah.
That's awkward as crap.
They just look at each other and say, God is so good. And there's no blankets. Everybody is just sitting regular. There's no hanky-panky funny business.
She's looking for an excuse to get rid of him.
But this couch is very uncomfortable. No one can even grasp the Holy Spirit when on this couch.
Have you ever sat in a piece of furniture where like this is so uncomfortable?
When you're in love with someone and you're dating, you could be a rock. It didn't matter. You could be sitting on a box of thumbtacks. You'd be like, I don't care. I'm
true.
With you.
How many times have you like when you were in your the dating relationship and like, I don't know, your person that you love is done falling asleep with their head on your shoulder and you don't want to move, but it
your
is not comfy.
You're like, I don't care.
Yeah, you got to pee.
You do it.
And your arm fell asleep, but you ain't going anywhere.
She needs to move on.
Yeah, I mean, through the dating process, I agree with you. You said it, but from experience, I was told that a couch is not allowed to come into a marital house.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might have had something to do with uncomfort, but you do put up with it during the dating phase.
For sure. Uh-huh. For sure.
Okay. I don't know. I've sat in chairs where I'm like, I can't be in this thing for an hour. For like a movie amount of time? No way. Hour and a half?
Yeah.
But here's the deal. I am of an age of which I can't sit places for very long. So, I mean, in your scenario, I can't sit most places for 45 minutes.
This is why I find it to be very difficult. If something were ever to happen to my wife, this is why I have zero plans for remarriage. Because if I sat down on some other woman's couch, I'm like, this couch sucks, I'm out. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've already had a lifelong love. I'm going to go home. I have a comfortable couch at my house that I love. And so, one, I don't know where you keep the mayonnaise. Two, this couch is very uncomfortable. Three, you use Tide. I don't use Tide. Yeah. I'm out.
Yeah, she's not serious about the relationship. She needs to move on.
Okay. All right. Dan says, if you're talking about this way about the couch, then it's the man that's the problem. Nathaniel, do you agree?
Yeah. Okay. I'm with Dan.
Have you, Nathaniel, you sat in a couch or a chair where you're like, I just can't do it?
No, I find my buns find most things comfortable.
He said, I come with the seat the Lord provides.
I have conforming buns. That's true. I mean, I can sleep outside. I can fall asleep in the driver's side of a car. I can lay down uncomfortably in the back.
Fell asleep on a picnic table one time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if I want to rest and be comfy, I can come up with something.
Yeah.
I sleep on the floor occasionally, just for the wackadoo of it.
Hey, that actually, what Nathaniel said made me think that, like, buns of steel are very impractical.
Yeah.
That's not comfy.
Yeah.
Who would want that?
Yeah.
That's why I quit doing squats.
I bet Schwarzenegger don't sleep for beans.
Yeah. McCormick, you got to cut that down to 4 days a week.
Yeah.
You're heading down the wrong path, friend.
Yeah. I'm only about 3 weeks in, so we'll,
that's true.
We haven't got to that.
Man. Hey, man, what's your goal? I exercise for comfort. Which means I will not be up tomorrow.
Yeah. It's like, hey, I want you to think I look good, but I want to be very uncomfortable doing it. No, I'm out.
Yeah, yuck.
I'm cutting my program.
Okay. Our advice is you need to dump this guy either way. One,
he's out.
This is inappropriate. Two, you don't care. I mean, if this was uncomfortable, you wouldn't care because you're Netflix and watching the
television. Hold on. At what point would it switch? Like, let's say you're engaged. Do you tell your betrothed?
You just tell him that he can't bring it to your marital household.
He said, I spent a lot of money on this bed and all on this couch.
We will choose a couch together, which means... This as the
that means
wife,
you have no choice.
Which means I will be picking the couch and you will deal with it.
And he says, I think, if it's a deal breaker, you might as well know it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's the deal is we make the decisions on my house based on who uses the thing the most. Right? I'm not like, woman, I want your input on which hydraulic jack I pick up. You know what I'm saying? I don't care what she thinks. I'm going to buy the one I want, you know? But when we come to the couch, like, they just home more often than me. So I feel like... She gets to pick out the couches and go, this is comfortable to me. And I go, great.
Yeah.
I will make this happen.
Yeah. Do you grouse about it?
I don't grouse about anything.
Really? You say, I love all this stuff, whatever it is.
Yeah. She's like, hey, what do you think of the couches? And I say, solid pick, woman.
Mm.
I also happen.
What if she said, what do you really think? Would you get pressed into the corner like that?
Here's the deal. Sometimes I act as if I don't believe what I actually believe. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes I'm Paul and I say, why don't I do what I really want to do? And the truth is that I actually do want to love my wife well, more than I could speak about the couches. And so it doesn't matter what the actual answer is. I will say these couches are great.
So she goes, like, it's okay to Anne Frank that couch. You're going to lie about it.
What's the Anne Frank mean? Blind it?
No, you're going to tell.
No. Blind. No.
Is it Anne Frank blind? I don't understand. I don't know what that means to blind the couch. Why are you talking like this?
Listen to me. Anne Frank told lies to otherwise protect people.
Was she just the prolific liar that you came to mind?
Yeah, everybody knows.
Anne Frank's a liar.
I don't think
that's the name of the show.
I don't think you're right. I probably wouldn't lie about this. There'd be no reason to lie. But I've never met anything that's actually that big of a deal to me. There's like two things that are a big deal to me, and I can't even tell you what they are right now.
It's the mayonnaise and laundry detergent, as far as I heard.
Yeah, that's true. I don't like change.
Okay. All right. Let's do one more.
Wait. You don't know what the secular says.
Oh, shoot. Sorry.
Secular says... Start by telling your boyfriend that you can't get a good night's sleep in his bed because the mattress is uncomfortable for you. Do the same thing after watching TV on his couch. If your back needs more support, he shouldn't regard it as a personal insult. Then invite him to your place so he won't feel rejected. Why is everybody coddling this guy? Basically like patting him on the head saying, you're a good boy. I don't care for your better couch.
No, your steel bed of iniquity has nothing to do with me. I guess that gets to the point, though. It's like, what point do you go, look, man, your stuff's not comfy? Hey, by the way, I don't care for this couch.
I would say it to my friends. Like, where did you buy this steel beam? Why are we sitting on this?
Yeah.
If I went over to my friend's house to watch something, or like for the Super Bowl, and I'm like, why did you
pallet?
You bought an iron girder and a pallet for furniture. I ain't sitting on none of these things. I'm gonna bleed an inflatable chair.
Yeah, get a new chair if I'm coming back over here.
Yeah, you invited people over to this crap hole, and now you want them to sit on this board of nails? Ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay, here we go. Last one.
Yeah.
Dear life from the path. Meh. I started a new job a year and a half ago. It's in a small office. My boss and I are the only employees. I enjoy the job very much, but there's an aspect of it that has really started to wear on me. Increasingly, my boss has been asking me to take care of personal tasks for him that are unrelated to the business. I understand that he has no one else to rely on, but it shouldn't be my problem. I'm a single mom with two kids, and I already have enough on my plate. The final straw is when I asked for the day off to spend with my entire family, and he asked me to pick up his pets in the afternoon to save him the cost of having them boarded overnight, and then give him a ride home from the airport at 9:30 p.m. I had to leave my family gathering to do this. Part of me knows it wasn't fair of him to ask for these things. I don't want to lie and say I can't, but I don't want to seems petty. I have enough trouble running my own household without helping out with another. How do I say this without losing my job?
What's the job?
Unknown.
Like personal assistant? Two people.
That's good. What it felt like.
Information here. What?
Yeah.
There's only two people. I'm going to add some details.
It's like two people that work for the company or two people in the office?
Let's say that he runs an insurance agency and you run the front office.
She's the secretary.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Administrative assistant.
Okay. Well, so you got to separate a couple things. So if he says during the workday, if he's paying you and he wants you to take his mail to the post office or go pick up his dry cleaning, like either do it or don't do it. Like
all pay is the same.
Right. Like, same, what do you care?
Yeah.
Now, but the other things, hey, pick me up from the airport at 9 o'clock at night. Like this is not a job thing anymore. That's him just asking you to do it. And so if you don't want to do it, say you're not going to go do it. It's not your job. And so, like, within the hours, if he's paying for your hours, I always get this. I work at a pretty large corporation, and I get this all the time where people are like, oh, I don't really want to be a burden on this person, or like, I'm not sure whether we should go ask him. I'm like, we pay these people. Like, we're sending checks every 2 weeks. And so, like, they can, like, what do you care? What do you care? You're going to work here for 40 hours this week. What does it matter to you what the 40 hours is actually doing? Like, hey, we got to redo it because it wasn't good. Yeah. That's exact. We're going to pay you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what the complaint is. But when you start wandering outside of the work hours, then you got to go, yeah, look, you're paying me. My time is yours within reason for 8 hours a day. After that, no, that's my time. I took the day off. I'm not going to pick up your pets. You're going to have to pay for an Uber.
Yeah. So, like, Nathaniel and I will understand this point, but like what's a very central part of our job is they take a very simple task that you could just do and they make it extremely complicated, right? Like, what is for example, if I was going to go unscrew like the cover on a light switch, right? I'm like, okay, we can just do this. And they would say, you need a procedure.
And a JSA.
To do that. And you need to do a job safety analysis to make sure what are the hazards of doing this? And they have to list out all the hazards, right? And so like some people will get to the point where they're like, this is so stupid. I don't even want to work here. And to Ben's point, right, they pay by the hour. Like, if you don't want to work here, I think that's fine. You should get a job somewhere else where they don't make you do all these things. But, like, at the end of the day, they're paying you by the hour. If they want you to do an easy job and make it very difficult, that's their company. Fight to be the change you want to see. But other than that, right, like, just follow whatever they're doing. Yeah. And take their money and go home with a smile on your face and go, well, I spent 8 hours doing something that should take 3 minutes. That was inefficient.
Yeah.
But other than that, they paid me.
Yes. Well, I used to subscribe to that when I was hourly, right? They'd say, I need you to go sweep the warehouse. And I'm like, how many times? If you're going to pay me, like that's, you know, our hourly employees. I mean, I had an office that I think is about 3 inches smaller now because it's got about 800 coats of paint, because when you didn't have nothing to do, you had to go paint the office. And if you didn't want to do it, that was fine.
Yeah.
You don't got to do it, but I'm not going to pay you for
right. We're going to send you home,
but or you can paint the office.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, we painted it yesterday. Yeah, that's
yeah. Could use a fresh coat.
Yeah, good. I mean, so like during to Ben's point, during work hours, just you do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My question would be though, if he's going to have me pick him up from the airport at 9 o'clock, are you paying her?
Yeah.
Like if you're going to pay her and say, hey, I need you to pick me up at 9 o'clock, it's part of your job duties, and now you're going to clock a couple hours to do it.
Yeah.
it's probably a different conversation.
Yes. And this is where a salary count conversation starts to look a little different too, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean,
and how big the salary is.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a personal assistant making big dollars from some super wealthy person, it's
probably a little different than someone
told you up front, hey, by the way, I own you.
Yeah.
You
know,
and
so I'm very annoying.
Take the job.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, ultimately, now here's where you're in a tricky position. If he's just a wealthy man and you're getting paid very, very well, and like reasonably, you're getting overpaid if you're only doing the normal 9 to 5, and these are the extra things make sense and you need it for your family, then figure it out. Then say, well, it's worth it. No problem. Mm-hmm. If you're working the job, it's an okay job, you're getting paid okay, but some of these things are extra. And he's kind of implying, like, maybe he feels like he's got a closer relationship with you than you have with him. That's going to be weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be awkward to go, look, dude, we're not close enough for me to come pick you up at the airport at 9 o'clock at night and leave my kids at my place.
Yeah.
Like,
what if her and her kids flew in and be like, hey, Denver, you need to come pick me up?
Yes. Right. That's right. Either you got to pay me for it, or it has to be something that if I were in the same situation, I think that you would do it. And if it's not, then like you are going to have a weird conversation. And he may not fire you because, frankly, you could probably sue him if he fired you for that reason. But it's going to be real weird to work there.
Yeah.
So you just got to figure out what you're willing. Your trade-offs are in there somewhere.
Maybe even an honest conversation with the man and say, look, man, I'm a single mom. I have a lot of responsibility at home. I just don't think I can offer the things that you're looking for. Is that going to be a problem with me working here? Right? I like this job. I like the company that I work for. I like everything about this job, but I just cannot, like, basically it's taking time away from my kids that I just am not able to give.
Yeah.
What can we work out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. And then I guess you, that puts it on the table. He's either going to have to go.
I'm more important than your kids.
Yes. Which, you know, then it's not sustainable. Well, good. Now you're on a path to figuring out something different. Yeah. Or he's the guy who goes, you're right, that doesn't make any sense. You do you.
Especially if you haven't said anything, right? He's like, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me I was pulling you out of you putting your kids to bed at 9 o'clock at night? Like, I didn't even think about that. Right? That's not the stage of life I'm in. It didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah. It sounds like he's got dogs and no kids, right?
Exactly.
So.
Yeah,
and he can just put them in their jail and tell them to shut up. You know what I'm saying? Eat these milk bones. Daddy going out of town.
I think you can deal with kids that way. You just got to acclimate them to it.
All right, Segular says, for your boss to expect you to run errands for him without being compensated is taking advantage of you. The first thing I would do is, if I were in your shoes, would be to start exploring the job market in your community. Then, if I found anything that suited my particular skills, I would have a talk with my boss and explain that I have responsibilities after working hours that make it difficult to comply with his requests. If he values what you contribute to his business, he may figure out another way to get his errands run. However, if he doesn't, you will have another job lined up. Okay, well, I mean, maybe I could just give a fairy tale ending to everybody's problems, right? You instantly found a job that's just as good, that match all your skill qualities, and then you went in and told him what for, and then you had a complete
they're holding off
until graceful you find way to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody's life works like this, Secular. Don't worry, I already have a multi-million-dollar position lined up. But if you're willing to give in a little on this airport thing, I would stay working here. Ridiculous.
Weird. All right, you're listening live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. Big thank you to Mr. McCormick. Thanks for joining us tonight. Nathaniel is not up this late. He's burning the midnight oil tonight.
Which I don't know why. He ain't getting up hitting the juice. He ain't getting up reading his Bible. And he also ain't getting up hitting the iron. So I don't know exactly why he's all worn out.
I got up this morning.
What did you do this morning?
I buzzed in.
I saw it.
Yeah.
Did you hit the iron?
No, I did it after work.
Okay. Never mind. Nathaniel's tired for legit reasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's out there burning it up. All right. So anyway, thanks for coming in there.
One day in a row. Stop it.
Every pattern starts with it. All right. Anyway, thanks for hanging out with us this week. Excited. We'll see you next week live with some music in the studio. In the meantime, be faithful and means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Mm-hmm.